This is a story from the very far distant past. It's a tale of a time before time. It's a mountain story of a time before there were mountains, and a story of stone from a time before there was stone. In the very beginning, the mountain lands were not the mountain lands we know today. The waters of the mountain lands didn't flow in little streams and channels down to feed the Tigris and the Euphrates so that the waters could irrigate the land, make the barley grow and feed the people. No, the waters were encased, imprisoned, still. And the mountain meadows weren't verdant, growing with herbs and fruit, providing honey and wine. And there were no mountain forests, no cedar, no boxwood, no apricot. There was no sound of the ringing of tin and copper and gold. There was no perfume from the flowers of the mountain meadows. The day that all that beauty and abundance came into being was a day of wonderful creation, but it was a day of terrible destruction as well. And the one who brought about that creation, the one who brought about that destruction, who was that? That was Ninurta. Ninurta, he's the god of the thunder, flood, and of plough. Ninurta is the shadow who covers the land, like the southern storm. He's the deluge who engulfs the banks. Ninurta rides on a chariot that is made of the eight winds. The hurricane pulls his chariot. He ties the sirocco, the evil wind, to a pole. He has the lance of lightning in his left hand. And in his right hand, he holds the mace, his faithful weapon, his charur. The charur, the servant who loves him, lion-headed, sharp-toothed, the charur flies out on wings all around the horizon, spins out to bring him back the news. One day, Ninurta was sitting on the royal dais, the carved boxwood throne of the land, and he was sitting at the feast, the festival given in his honour. Alongside him sat the great god Enlil, his father. And Ninurta was drinking and eating his fill, drinking to outrival Enlil. And all around them, there were the lesser gods, the Anuna gods. And all this time, Ninurta was listening to their disputes, and then he was handing out good decisions and wise judgments, when suddenly a cry went up and all eyes turned to the far horizon. And there they all saw something shooting towards them, hurtling through the air. The company parted, and into Ninurta's presence there flew, there span the charur, its little wings flapping like the southern storm. It approached Ninurta and it span before him. It had come to bring him the news. "Oh, Master Ninurta, warrior, great king, great god, the heavens have copulated with the verdant earth, and she has borne him a child." Now this was news indeed, and the charur had everybody's undivided attention. So he carried on. "This is a child, a son, a warrior who knows no fear. He's impudent of eye, an arrogant male. He's the murderer in the mountains. His name is the Asag." Everybody gasped, and they all looked at Ninurta to see what his response would be, but Ninurta merely narrowed his eyes. He knew that the charur had not finished. In the mountains, the plants have made the Asag their king. His roots spread out, his branches spread out. He drops his seed everywhere. His seeds are his children. His children are the stones, and the stones are his warriors, his army. The hematite, the dolerite, the lapis lazuli, and the flint. All these young warriors roll down, march down the hills, and destroy the mountain cities, winning more and more territory for their lord. Master Ninurta, the Asag has set up a throne in the mountain lands. There he sits as king. There he hands out judgments. There he gives decisions. Lord Ninurta, he plans to take away your kingdom. Everybody looked at Ninurta. This time they saw him stand. They saw him clench his fists. With his fists he beat his thighs. He opened his mouth. And the cry that came was the roll of the thunder. And then he spoke. We fight. All the lesser gods, the Anuna gods, they backed away. They turned and they fled. They all disappeared over the horizon like a flock of sheep running to hide in hollows. Behind bushes and under rocks. He called for his eight-winged chariot. He took the hurricane. He tied the sirocco, the evil wind, to a pole. He took his lance of lightning in his left hand, and he reached out with his right. And the sharur, his mace, his faithful weapon that loved him, span to his hand. And then the chariot rose into the air, and hurtled off across the land, and wherever it went, the hurricane tore up trees, raised mounds, filled in hollows, until at last Ninurta and his chariot reached the mountain lands. There he restrained the hurricane. There he released the sharur and watched it as it span deep into the mountain lands, and he waited. And at last saw it return. Return on little wings that fluttered, flapped like the southern storm. It returned to its master. It flung its arms around his neck and embraced him. Said, Master Ninurta, change your mind. Don't fight this fight. Run away. I have seen the Asag. It is terrifying, and it is hard, hard of eye, hard of heart, and hard of flesh. No weapon will overturn it. No axe or spear will penetrate that flesh. It's beyond all control. His weight is too heavy. His strength is too massive. And he is clever. Remember the fights that you have fought. You killed Kuleana the dragon. You killed the seven-headed snake. You killed the Anzu bird. Let these successes be enough. Run away. Ninurta frowned. He called for the eight-winged chariot. He tied the sirocco to a pole. He took his lance of lightning in his hand and with the sharur in the other, hurtled off into the mountain lands. Till they came to the place where the Asag towered over them. It was immense, shutting out the sunlight. The Asag looked down at Ninurta, and there was a movement, the crack and the groan of stone, and a great arm, craggy, huge, reached up into the sky. The Asag thrust his arm deep into the sky, turned the sky inside out, gave it a twist, made it into a club for his hip, raised it up and beat the earth. And then the battle began, the Asag and Ninurta, and alongside the Asag fought his children, the the stones, the hematite, the gadolerite, the lapis lazuli, the flint. The asag was like a wall, collapsing, thundering down, crushing Ninurta. Great fires engulfed the land. The land was black as potash, animals roasted like locusts. Birds tried to fly away, but their wings trailed on the ground. The waters threw up their fish that gasped on dry land in air, and the air was filled with dust. Ninurta's eyes were filled with dust. His mouth was filled with dust. And then he realized that the hand that held the sharrow was empty. Where was his faithful companion? Where was his faithful weapon, his servant? The sharrow was flying, hurtling away from the mountain lands, returning to his father, Enlil. And there it was telling Enlil the whole story. And when Father Enlil heard the words of the sharrow, he smiled. He said, "Say this to my son Ninurta. Why did I set you on the throne of the land? Why did I raise you up above myself? Because you and you alone will kill the Asag. Tell my son Ninurta, why did I give you the deluge? Why did I give you the lightning? Tell my son Ninurta, bring down the deluge and wash the dust from the air. Bring down the flood and wash the dust from your eyes. And when you see clearly, raise up your lance of lightning and pierce the Asag. Pierce its liver." The sharrow returned spinning across the plains, returned through the dust-filled air, returned to the hand of its master, said to Ninurta, "I bring you the words of your father Enlil. Your father Enlil says, why did he set you on the royal throne of the land so you could kill the Asag? He says, why did he give you the flood, the deluge, so you could wash the dust from the air, wash the dust from your eyes? Why did he give you the lance of lightning so you could pierce the liver of the Asag? Wash the dust from the air, wash the dust from your eyes, take your lance of lightning, pierce the liver of the Asag." Ninurta heard the words of his father Enlil. He reached up, he brought down the deluge, and the flood washed the dust from the air. The flood washed the dust from his eyes. And once more he saw clearly the Asag towering above him. He took his lance of lightning and he let it fly. And his aim was true. There was the crack, the splinter of rock. Sparks flew. He struck the Asag, he pierced its liver, and the power of the Asag was contained. It began to fade. It looked wonderingly upwards. It began to fade. Ninurta put out his hand into the heart of the Asag, and it was like putting your hand into water. Ripples spread out. Like water, he agitated it, he scattered it, and then like weeds, he ripped it up. Like reeds, he pulled it up, and then he ground it like barley, and then he piled it up as if he was piling heaps of broken bricks, heaped it up like the miller heaps up flour, heaped it up like the potter heaps up coals. He piled it up like stamped earth. The sun bade the mountain lands goodbye. It was the end of the day. And as the sun sank over the horizon, it stained the sky red. sun mixed with dust and blood. The sky red that day for the very first time, as it has been ever since at evening time. And Ninurta, he took his faithful bloodstained servant, the weapon, the sharrow, and he took it to the waters and he washed the blood from himself, washed the blood from the weapon. And then he returned to the body of the Asag, and standing there in the fading light, he sang his warrior's victory chant over the body of the Asag, and his sweet voice, the voice of the southern wind, brought the Anuna gods flocking over the landscape like a flock of sheep, come running towards their lord, their master, their king. And they all flooded round him to congratulate him. But it was the Sharrow who sang the praises of Ninurta. "Oh, Ninurta, my lord, my master, darting dragon, snarling lion, swaying serpent, roaring hurricane. It was Ninurta who has defeated the monster of the mountain lands. He has laid waste the rebel lands, cast his net over the foe, defeated all around him, reclaimed the mountain lands, reclaimed the mountain lands. The Asag is dead. Henceforth, let no one call it Asag. Let its name be stone. Let its body be the mountain. Let its entrails be the underworld. And the body will be the region of the Lord." These were the words of the Sharrow. And all that remained now for Ninurta was to deal with the prisoners. And so he sat on the seat of the land, the royal carved boxwood throne, and one by one the prisoners came to stand before him. All the children of the Asag, all those young warriors, the stones. And to each on that day he gave its fate and gave its destiny according to its loyalty. To the Dolorite he said, "You called out, this battle is wrong. The Lord alone is warrior. So I say, let you be set in copper to decorate the warrior's arm. Let the king make his statue from you." But to the limestone, when he walked forward, Ninurta said, "You called out, I will be the Asag's great advisor. Let you lie like a pig on the ground, broken into bits, humbled by the builder." And to the granite and the basalt, he said, "As you two refuse to stand against me, may the silversmith and the foundry man love you and praise you and use you for their craft work, for their small work." But to the Shagara stone, he said, "You tramped the highland to pinion me. So may the reed worker make you leap from the reeds. May no man live in need of you. May no one mention the loss of you." And then at last, when all the destinies had been set down, when all the stones had been dealt with, then Ninurta turned to the body of the Asag, to the mountain. And he began to shape and he began to sculpt. And he made channels. He dug channels and smoothed them. So now at last the waters could flow. And then the streams sprang, flowed, rushed down the mountains, to flow into the Tigris and the Euphrates, to irrigate the land. And then it became the mountain lands that we know, thick with forest, teeming with animals, with birds, and the mountain meadows abundant, abundant with honey and vine and ripe with fruit, ringing with tin and copper, silver and gold. Now you know how the mountain lands came to be. It was all created by Ninurta.